At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Morning all, Friday morning, heading into the weekend. The Neil Prendeville Show, open for business in association with Elevate Credit Union. It's Friday, so amongst a lot of other things, Free Food Friday in association with the delicious food from Hillbilly's. A lovely start to the weekend and a great treat. Lots of different chicken. I'll tell you all about the food a little later on this morning, but it'll feed a lot of you, and we need to know who you are and where you're working and who you're working with and what you do, things like that. So text 0868 104 106. More details on that across the morning, obviously. Paper-wise this morning, a very mixed bag. There's some interesting court reports this morning, actually. One is from the Irish courts. It's a bizarre story that makes many of the red tops, and it takes up pretty much almost a page in The Independent, of a woman who faked her own death. It was this deliberate scheme to avoid standing trial. Well, she was eventually before the court yesterday and jailed for 3 years. It's the story of Amy McCauley, a 35-year-old. This is the Dublin Circuit Criminal Court yesterday. So theft and deception charges. She altered here, some of the back charges involved her taking out a 10 grand loan from KBC with altered documents, and then an unsuccessful attempt to try and do it again for 5 grand. There were other ones. She stole over 55 grand from an employer in 2015, stole 3 grand's worth of mobile phones from 3 Ireland in 2021, all that kind of stuff. But she apparently, the trial didn't go ahead originally because she pretended to be her sister, contacted the guards and said that she had died, that, you know, she was pretending to be her sister, and that the girl, Amy McCauley, who was supposed to go to court, had actually died. She even went so far as to create a fictitious undertaker who then put up posts on RIP.ie, 3 different death notices that she had died, right? And she was pretending that she had died and pretending that it was her sister, it was her all of the time, was telling people that she had died. Now, so things kind of went away, but then the guards became aware in the middle of 2023 that she was actually alive and well, and started investigating again. There was this amazing thing. It actually ended up in court yesterday, and that's where she got the 3 years jail. I don't think so much for the deception, but to answer the charges against her I think it was deception charges regarding, you know, all the different incidents that I just mentioned there. There was even another one that when she was pretending to be dead, there was a company death in service benefit pending to pay out on her death, in inverted commas. But while she was pretending to be her sister, the company paid out a 9 grand as a goodwill payment. So she was up to an awful lot of stuff in a very tricksy manner. Faked her own death to beat the trial, but at the end of the day, she's in jail now because of it. And then, of course, a story that's been covered very much over the previous days is this Irish firefighter, Terence Crosby. He's eventually been sentenced in America to at least 7 years, found guilty of raping a woman during a St. Patrick's Day trip to the US. He was before the courts. This happened in Boston last year. Actually, at one stage, he asked the judge to consider his wonderful wife and 2 beautiful daughters, for whom he said he is the main provider. But he never ever even apologized or said sorry or showed any remorse for the rape that he was found guilty of. That's the front page of the Red Tops also this morning. And then you have all sorts of different ways of communicating for all the wrong reasons with people. And there's an example of that in the front of the Indo today, where a teacher bombarded a student with 1,200 messages a day. I mean, that is off the scale by a long shot. Married man, a campaign of harassment developed an obsession, apparently, with a teenage student, a boy. 250,000 Snapchat messages over a 7-month period. This is harassment off the scale. So much so that the misfortunate boy made several attempts on his own life. So that's before the courts at the moment. It's a front page of making the Independent today. And the tragically sad story of Martin Lawler. I recall covering that back in the day, back in 2018, the married father of 3, at the age of 49, died from sustained injuries after a collision on the Kinsale Road. He was walking home from a Christmas party at the time, and a personal, he died, misfortunate man, left a wife and children behind. Now, there was a personal injury case brought by his wife, of the renowned consultant psychiatrist Martin Lawler, and that was in court yesterday, and the legal team on behalf of the family was headed up by Dr. John O'Mahony, and it was settled yesterday. Originally, the proceedings would have been against the taxi driver that hit Martin Lawler. There was a man called Dennis McSweeney who has subsequently died. He admitted that he had failed to stop after the accident and that the fatal injuries to Dr. Lawler were as a result of the collision. It's just so, so tragic. Such a young man. Such a happy, happy family. Anyway, it was eventually the case ended up against AXA Insurance. And that was settled yesterday in court. There are many other stories that dominate the papers regarding money. And it's appalling when you have a front page like the Mail this morning where two hospitals paid consultants twice. They call it being paid on the double. This would be Nace General Hospital and Kerry University. They were being paid anyway, but they misused taxpayers' money to pay the consultants twice from a fund, actually, that was supposed to be used for, you know, trying to improve special out-of-office, out-of-hours clinics and reduce waiting times and get more stuff done at the weekends. Hospital consultants would be being paid for that anyway. So, I mean, that's just absolutely appalling. I mean, where's the due diligence and checks and balances and things like that? Anybody hear the audio or the little bit of footage that's doing the rounds regarding Simon Harris? For some reason, he's had a complete flip and changed his mind on the amount of international protection order applicants that are coming into the country. And he said a lot yesterday. And then, of course, he got slammed by the Social Democrats, who are comparing him to Nigel Farage. You know, we had a stage, actually, and I can come back to the statistics later on, when there was maybe 3,500 people applying for international protection in this country annually. That figure now has bounced upwards of 18,500 for last year alone, and it's destined to potentially be even much higher than that in 2025. Was it anything to do with Roderick O'Gorman's tweet? I don't know. But now, for some reason, Simon Harris has decided that it's time, he said, to start listening to the Irish people. If you didn't hear it, have a listen.
Of course we have international obligations, but our migration numbers are too high. One of the reasons they're so high is that there are too many people who come to this country and who are told they do not have a right to be here, and it is taking too long for them to be removed from the country. I welcome the work that the Minister for Justice has started around deportation flights, around improving processing times. I do think the Asylum Pact will also help in terms of secondary movements and being able to return people. But I think we have to be honest. I think we have to listen to the people of this country who have said, who I believe are saying to us, look, we used to live in a country where around 3,000 people sought international protection each year. That number has gone to in and around 20,000, sometimes a little above it, sometimes a little below it. That is a very, very significant increase, and it is too high. We need to get to a system where people have a right, who have a right to stay here, be here, are told that quickly, and then can get on with their lives and contribute positively to our country and integrate. But where they don't have a right to be here, I'm saying to you very honestly, and I'm saying to the people of Ireland, we're not where we need to be. And what I am saying to you is the system needs to change.
How does it need to change, Simon, my friend? I mean, what are you going to do about it? It's just amazing. Listen to the people now. Has this anything to do with the changing fortunes of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael and the presidential race? Does he see an opportunity now to cut loose from Micheál and kind of go on a solo run? I mean, there's not going to be a general election. Maybe he's genuine. There won't be a general election for a number of years yet. But anyway, it's an interesting change, isn't it? Now listening to the people and how they feel. In actual fact, you talk about people who have kind of almost like, you know, changed horses midstream. Micheál's done that as well. You see in this morning's Mail, and I read it online last night, that Micheál Martin now is admitting that Billy Kelleher might well have been the stronger candidate in hindsight. But bizarrely, I did read somewhere where Micheál Martin said that if Billy Kelleher had come to him earlier, that he would have got on the ticket probably, but that he didn't and it was too late and the minds were made up. Many within Fianna Fáil would say that Micheál goes on solo runs and things like this. He denies it. He says he's not a top-down manager. He listens to everybody, grassroots, and his phone is always I will say that. He'll always respond to you, if nothing else. But he's now saying that, there's no truth in the rumour that he's anything like a regal French king of yesteryear, as was suggested by James O'Connor. But there are those within Fianna Fáil saying that Micheál Martin does actually very much ruled in a kind of an autocratic way, where it's his way or the highway. But it's interesting, Billy Kelleher may have been the stronger candidate in hindsight. And then, of course, he's had no regrets, he said, though, about not running Bob Geldof, who recently said that he would have walked into the Oras if Fianna Fáil had put him on the ticket. So this story bubbles away for a little while yet. You know the Super Casino in Ballincollig, and there's a petition and an appeal for it not to go ahead. It's very interesting because the papers this morning, I read it in the Mail, says that the former Paddy Power boss, as a man called Stuart Kenny, he set up and co-founded the betting giant back in 1988. His name is Stuart Kenny, ex Paddy Power boss. He said that online gambling is as addictive as cocaine and it should be taxed at a higher rate. But he makes an interesting point in the article where he says if somebody opens an account to have a bet, say on the next general election or Manchester United to win the league, if they open an account, within 24 hours, they're being offered free spins on the online casino and online slots. So the headline says, online slots are as addictive as cocaine. So bear that in mind as to what he's saying. Historically, what he has learned down through the years, he says it's like sucking people from the least addictive product, like betting on a horse, into the most addictive product, like slots and casino gambling. So I pass that on for what it's worth, the changing face of Cork, or indeed possibly Ballincollig. I mean, the Echo talks more about buses on the front page this morning. The idea is to rise capacity by 50%. The capacity is great, but what about the chaos? What about the gridlock? How are they going to sort all of that out? But that's a front pager that continues. And you know, it's got to be a good thing. We have need for more hotel bedrooms, I suppose, to encourage more people to come here. So the Premier Inn Hotel has got the approval now on McCurtain Street to move into and to put a hotel where Leisureplex is. And they figure that construction could start in the coming months. And we'll need all of those hotels when the conference, convention and concert centre finally opens, whatever decade that will be. And of course, across the water, and much of the papers here in Ireland as well, talk about Andrew, formerly known as the Prince. He was, of course, the Queen's favourite, and he has now been booted out of his royal lodgings where he lived rent-free for many, many years. I believe I read somewhere that he's just being moved to another big swanky estate owned by Prince Charles or King Charles somewhere else. I don't think he's going to be homeless or potless. But Fergie has to come up and sort out her own accommodation going forward. That's an interesting one. But anyway, Charles stripped him yesterday of all of his titles, and he will now in future be known as a Mr. as opposed to a Prince. He'll be Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. It caught up with him in many ways. He's still very much denying all of the allegations against him regarding Virginia Giuffre and Jeffrey Epstein. But the King's just fed up of it. He's had enough. It's tarnishing the image of himself and the royal family. And I suppose they are also reading the room. Do you know how things change in the world we live in? Certainly, I see more examples of that all of the time. And I was kind of a bit bewildered this morning when I saw that Gordon Ramsay is chopping 200 jobs within his empire because he's losing money. He's got so many different restaurants of different shapes and fashion. He had losses, apparently, of 15 million last year, and he's invested huge amounts of money. And that's all very well, okay? It's a very competitive game, the restaurant market, I get that. But one paragraph in it was quite interesting because he says he needs less front-of-house staff. He needs less waiters and less waitresses and less servers and things like that for one reason in particular. Because more and more people now don't want to engage with front of house staff or waiters or waitresses. I think we just call everybody waiters now, a bit like everybody's an actor. Because customers now are ordering from an online menu or they're ordering on their phones rather than chatting with the waiting staff. So that's all very well, but you still need somebody to come and get the plates and the dirty plates and take away all of the dishes. But that's one of the reasons why. So we're moving even more towards people not wanting to communicate. You see a lot of people now sitting in restaurants across from each other. They don't say a word. They're engrossed with their phones. I don't think they even taste the food. But now they don't want to talk to the wait staff. They would prefer now to have an online small little tablet on the table or else download the menu on their phone. I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it? Soon we won't communicate at all, or we'll be doing it with sign language or something. I don't know. And for those of you that thought that we had a UFO, I was hoping it was, wouldn't it be great? I mean, it'd be fab, wouldn't it, as long as they were friendly? But apparently not. All of these different sightings around the Irish skies over the last few days is just Elon Musk letting off fuel from the SpaceX rocket, apparently. And that's what you've been seeing. So, sorry, it would be great over Halloween, wouldn't it? To have all sorts of spirits in the sky and UFOs as well. But also, I should have mentioned this, actually, talking about the changing generations. And of course, this, of course, is a question that could be debated for hours and hours on end. It certainly has been within my own family, because my son believes that he makes the greatest omelette ever invented. And it's very much a personal choice as to what you put into an omelette. The problem with omelettes, I think, is if you put in too much, they become a soggy mess, don't you know? But anyway, I mention it because Gen Z, Gen Z, whatever you mean yourself, they've ditched the avocado on toast. Awful stuff, avocados, aren't they? What's the attraction and all? I don't get it. And now they've moved on to trying to create the perfect omelette. And they're watching all sorts of different chefs giving tutorials online on social media as to do just that. So omelettes are in, avocados are out, apparently. The problem, apparently, the Gen Z are having is burning the bottom of the eggs, right? Overcooking it, putting in too much filling. Listen, you'll never go wrong with a cheese and chopped ham omelette. Full stop. Now, you can dicky it up with a bit of hot sauce if you want, but it takes from it, I believe. You can dicky it up with a bit of spice here and there. You can throw a bit of tomato sauce. Not for me. None of that. You can put chorizo in instead of ham. I don't care what you do. But for me, a simple cheese and onion. Oh, maybe onion, but certainly cheese and ham with salt and cracked black pepper. Your only man. And I might well come back to this a little later on this morning. It's a story on Vogue. It's the Australian edition of Vogue. So read into that where you will, where they are now saying, in the world that we live in, that having a boyfriend is embarrassing. Now, I could spend 10 minutes telling you why the article says that, and I might come back to it a little later on. But here we have again more barrage and negativity and grief for men. When will it ever end? And now we're hearing that having a boyfriend is embarrassing.
So just on that one, how do you do yours, your omelette, the best omelette? Text 0868104106. What's the secret?
You're talking about secrets, actually, and stories involving how we cohabitate or how we... relationship stories, if you like. I was speaking recently about a codependent couple. It was a lesbian couple in America, do absolutely everything together. They go to appointments together. They get lonely when they're in separate rooms, and they'll text each other. They drive everywhere together. They work together. They miss each other all of the time. They go to the bathroom together. I suppose that's a lot more okay if you're a gay female couple going to the bathroom together. I think husbands and wives is just really... even with regards to codependency, that's probably even a step too far. But I was curious as to how codependent people on Lee side or in Ireland might be. Is there any codependency with anyone in your life? Do you ring your mum, your mam, or your best friend, or your husband 20 times a day? And I've got some confessions for you this morning amongst them. Avril. Avril, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
Good, thanks. And you are one of the ones that calls your husband quite a lot every day.
Oh, I'm lethal for it. I'm lethal. He goes out to work at around 6:30, 7 o'clock. And then when I drop my daughter down to the village to get the bus at 8, I ring him on the way down. And then we say hello. You swear to God, I wasn't after saying goodbye to him at all at 7 o'clock. And then on my way back up, I collect the other two to bring him down to the village again for school at 8:30. And we ring him again in the car on the way down. It's just routine. And then I ring him on the way back up, because I can talk to him then about the moods of the kids that morning.
That's like three times already in the space of less than an hour, I think.
Oh, before like 9:30, I'd be after ringing him at least three times. The man is a saint to put up with me. And then I will ring around 10 o'clock then, because he'll pop into my mind and I'll be like, I wonder now, is he having his cup of tea in the front of the van? He needs a bit of company. So I give him a buzz. So I'll ring him again at 10 and I'll say, yeah, and you're breaking. And he's just like, do you think I have nothing to do? I'm up on a roofing. And then I'll be like, oh, sir, go on, look, go on away. I'll ring you there later. I'll
you're going to kill that man on a roof reaching for his mobile phone because you want to have a natter.
Yes. And then if he doesn't answer on the first ring, I'll ring a second time just to make sure, like, you know, this.
Oh, no, you're not one of those. Oh, my God, the most annoying people on the planet. If the call doesn't answer, it means that either we didn't hear it or we can't get to it right now. You hang up and do it again.
Yes, why? He knows it's an emergency that I need to talk to him. But it might be over rubbish. I might just need to rant and rave, and then he'll be like, are you finished now? I have to go back. I'd be like, Grant, no problem. And then he'll go away. And yeah, I could genuinely ring him anything up to 8 or 10 times a day.
This man has the patience of a saint.
Oh, he's horizontal. He'd have to be when you're dealing with me. Like, you'd have to be horizontal to deal with me. So, and then the gas thing he always gives out about is, he's just like, I answer you every time you ring. And when I ring you then, I mightn't get a return phone call for at least 3 hours. And then you say, but sure, I was busy. But I would miss the phone calls. Like, I have certain times of the day that, like, yeah, I'd give him a buzz there, now.
How many times have you called him already? It's just after 9:30.
Oh, well, I had a few questions for him now this morning, which were business related. So I rang him. He was just gone out the door and I said, oh, I never asked you about the electrician. And I'm after being on to him 4 times today already.
That poor man, he must be worn out.
No, there's no wearing out. He loves me.
Do you ever pick up kind of a feeling or the sound of his voice that he's exasperated or frustrated or trying to get off the phone?
No, he's very quiet anyway, right? He doesn't say very much in our conversations. He kind of lets me do the yapping, as you can hear from me. I'm well able to yap.
I know, but I would suggest that as soon as you hang up, he probably says something, some kind of an explanation. That woman is just frying my brain.
I'd say it's his business partner. Would actually say it more than Noel, because his business partner didn't. If God forbid, if Noel forgot his phone at home in the walk-in wardrobe, like, I would ring
the where? The where?
In the walk-in wardrobe, I'd ring Graham, his business partner, and I'd say, Graham, Noel forgot his phone now. Is there any chance you could just pass the phone there to him? But I would refrain from ringing him in the 10 times that day. I might only ring 6.
On Graham's phone.
Yeah, and Graham just passes it over, so they know what I'm like. So
you know that they're rolling their eyes to heaven, you know what I mean? Your man is saying to him, Mother of God, what did you ever sign up with your one? but let me get back. I mean, he must be flying up on roofs if you've got a walk-in wardrobe. Describe that to me.
A walk-in wardrobe? Doesn't everybody? Well, that was one of my requirements if we were building the house. I was like, I want a walk-in wardrobe. I don't want a little cubby hole where you just stand inside the door and you're consumed and overwhelmed by clothes. I just want you to be able to walk into it. I said, I will forfeit the box room to have a walk-in wardrobe.
Okay, all right. So yeah, is it so all yours or is his and hers walk-in wardrobe?
Now, if you asked him that question, because I said, how will he come on to Neil in the morning for the crack? I said, and you can give your side of the story. He was like, you can go to hell now. He says, off with you, off with you. If he was there now to answer, he is one little section and I have the rest.
Yeah. So have you got it kind of broken down into an area for shoes, an area for handbags, an area for dresses, an area for casuals?
I do. I have a jeans section and that takes over one part. And then I've all my shoes in boxes and they're labelled because I love my shoes. And the handbags had to be taken out of there because they were kind of taking up a bit too much space.
Where are they? Is there a walk-in handbag room or something?
I wish. No, my son's wardrobe, he has an area in it, and I just felt like his clothes, he's only 7, and his clothes don't take up too much space. So I was like, I'll be able to take a bit of that now.
You're like a cuckoo, you know that, invading everybody else's territory. And the walk-in wardrobe, is it chaotic in that? No, I'm just curious. Is it like, or is it?
No.
Very organized?
Very organized. Very organized. Wow. Like Noel's work clothes, when he takes them off, there's a certain box there and it's like out of the view because I'd be posting outfits and whatever, you know, on Instagram, and I just kind of like, you can't let your clothes there. So put them into that box.
Why hasn't he got something? Like he's the man in your life. He should have his own walk-in space, sections for ties, sections for his watch collection, sections for his cufflinks collection, sections for his suits. For his,
I'd say the only set of cuffs he ever has was for his wedding day. I'd say that was about it. So
he's 20 years in cufflinks, woman.
Oh, I know. 20 years, he's one set of cufflinks. But that's all right, too.
No, I'm right not too. Talking about cufflinks for your shirt.
Oh, God. I missed that one.
I'm talking about another type of cuffs.
Yeah. Oh, God. So,
Come here, before I let you go, did you drop that size for Christmas? When were we talking about dropping a size for Christmas? Do I remember that?
That's right. Last year, I dropped the dress size and I fit into the black dress. just by pure exercise and calorie counting. And there is a new thing now happening. I married 20 years in March, and I came downstairs there about 4 weeks ago with my wedding dress. And I said, no, come on, we'll renew our vows. And he looked at me and he said, are you for real? He said, I got bitten once. Do you think I'm going back again? And I said, sure, look, 20 years. I said, come on, look at the dress and all. I said, I'm squashing into it. But I said, I'll make sure it gets to fit me properly and I'll redesign the dress and we'll redo our vows. And he goes, I'm telling you now, Av. He said, reach 2,000 followers on Instagram and I'll renew the vows with you. And he said, you can get a new dress. So that's what I'm aiming at now. But he gave me a time limit. February is my cutoff point.
Okay, well, we need to drive some traffic to your Instagram, so don't
you
we?
Have to, Neil.
That man must be, he's just got to be exhausted, poor old Graham. And how do you what's renewing your vows about? It comes up at a, like you say, 20th anniversary. What do you put on your wedding dress? Does he put on the suit that he wore when he got married?
Oh, he'll get all dapper now and everything.
Okay.
So I'll fall
Where do you go?
In love with him, So I would like, personally myself, I would be religious to a certain degree. I'd like to get a blessing, you know, in my local church and have those nearest and dearest. But we had a small wedding first day. We had 40 people. We went to Lanzarote. And we'd love to invite the 40 people back that were originally there first day.
My God, this woman is absolutely loaded. How would you afford that?
Well, it won't. I'll be repurposing the dress. My cousin will alter that. No, she doesn't.
No, but you've got to pay for 40 people to go to Lanzarote.
No, we're not going to Lanzarote. We're only doing it local.
Oh.
Probably go, oh, God, yeah. No, we're not going to Lanzarote at all. We'll do it local.
But if you want to repeat everything, you've got to repeat the whole thing, like, don't you? Well, I suppose
maybe
that's
all. Oh, you'll repeat it, but I'd be a little bit more savvy this time. Like, you know what I mean? As in, you don't have to have all the flowers and the bouquets. I wouldn't be having
all
that.
Is it not naff, though?
Kind of getting. I think it's nice.
No.
Isn't that? Like, I don't know, I think every milestone should be celebrated in life.
But no, in the wedding gear, though.
Oh, well, no, well, I'm redesigning the dress. It'll be the original dress, but I'll redesign the dress. So it won't be naff. Like, I won't be walking up now with my, you know, with my big train and my veil and my tiara. Like, I'm not that much of a princess.
He's up for it anyway because he has no choice.
He's up for it only if I get to 2,000 followers. So, like, you have to help me on this one now, Neil, and I'll bring you along for the journey.
Okay, so what's your Insta? What's your Insta?
So it's Avril T. Tiger.
Tiger suits you.
Exactly. Well, Neil, that's it. He's long and suffering, but sure, look, he's willing to recommit again, so that's the
fair play. Avril P. Tiger on Insta. Get her ahead of 2,000 followers because she wants to renew her vows. Avrilp Tiger.
Tiger.
Stay in touch. Perfect. Let me know. We'll celebrate the 2,000th, all right?
Good man, Neil. Thanks a million.
Cheers. I called my mum first thing in the morning. I'd ring her after lunch and then before bedtime to say goodnight, says Bernice. On Saturdays, we used to go to the city and spend time together, shop and have lunch. My mom is gone 4 years now, and I'm glad we spend so much time together because now I miss her so much. Rest in heaven and peace, mom. PJ says, absence makes the heart grow fonder, don't you know? Too much of a good thing is just not good for you. Claire says, honestly, I love my own space. I'll check in with my people, but I'm not texting or calling all day. Quality, please, over quantity, people, and save the best chats for when it really counts. Roy says, independent space is paramount for every relationship to thrive. Mind you, Claire says, I call my mother every day, and I also see her every day. I'm 48 now. It has never been different. As in, phone call every day and a visit every day. So maybe it's not codependency on Lee's side with regards to your partner. It's codependency to your mam. And would that make it very much a daughter-mam thing? How many times a day do you contact your partner? Grace, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm very good. Following on from Avril, what can you tell us about your communication habits with your husband?
Well, I kind of very similar, to be honest. I kind of thought that was normal, but obviously it's not.
10 times a day and counting is normal.
Well, I don't know about 10 times a day, but I'm definitely on 5, 6, 7 maybe.
And is there always a good reason?
Well, I suppose it's just general chit-chat, like, really, see how our day goes, or, like, I don't know, it's just, we live very busy lives, so I suppose it's, I just thought it was normal, really.
Okay, pretend I'm your husband now, okay? And you've just rang me. Go on, give me a typical example.
Oh God, you're embarrassing me now. I'd just be like, hi, how are you?
How's I'm good, how are you? My day is going well. So weather
okay,
is,
any
is,
news?
Not since I saw you long. It's grand, it's busy, tipping away.
Yeah, was anyone on to you?
How do you mean, like?
I don't know, like his mom or like, I don't know, his brother or something.
No one. Okay. Just working away. It's actually very busy, Grace. We're very busy at the moment. Yeah.
And then he'd might ring, I don't know, we'd just go, then I'd be like, right, so chat to you later, and then he'd
that's
ring
it. Oh, is that it?
Yeah, like it would just be general conversation. Like I thought this was kind of normal.
That's pointless. There's no reason for that call at all. Like,
no, there's not.
Unless you're checking in to see if I'm still alive or something, perhaps.
Well, yeah, maybe. Or then he'd ring me then maybe about an hour or two later, say, I don't know, just...
The same thing over again.
Same thing over again, yeah.
How are you? How's your day so far? Anybody on to you?
There'd be a bit of news, like, I don't know, something regarding work. I don't know, we both work for ourselves. There might be something happening. Like, I don't know, we're in the thick of trying to buy a house at the moment. Maybe, you know, we'd be talking about that. Or, I don't know, general chit-chat. Or he's big into the GAA. Like, he's a big match coming up on Sunday. Like, that might be a conversation. And then maybe around 4 or 5 o'clock, like, he'd ring and we'd, like, about the grocery list because he has a supermarket. So I'd be like, what food do we need for the dinner? But, like, it's nothing like telling me I love you or anything like that. It's just general conversation. There's no sweet nothings going on or, like, you know what I mean? I thought every couple was like this, to be honest.
But, like, and do you do this with other people besides your husband?
No, not really, no.
Not really?
No, I wouldn't. Like, I'm actually very bad for contact with my friends. Like, if you don't hear from me, like, I don't know. Like, I'm very bad. No, I prefer phone calls, though, than a text message. Like, I definitely am better at ringing someone than texting.
I don't mind phone calls, right? As long as they're very short.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like I couldn't do 15 or 20 minutes of nothingness on the phone with somebody. I would get frustrated.
Well, that's true. It depends on what you're talking or who you're talking to. Like, if it was a very close friend that I haven't caught up with in ages, well, then I'm going to talk to her for maybe a half an hour on the phone.
I mean, you'd be obliged to do that. You'd have to have a natter. It's only
like
manners.
My husband, it's only probably 2 or 3 minute conversation. Like, I don't think it's anything wild we're talking about, but it's just, you know, we do live very busy lives. Like, we're both self-employed. So, like, I suppose, and then we have very young kids. So when we come home in the evenings, it is all about the kids. So I suppose our general chit chat during the day is probably over nothing. But like, otherwise, we just wouldn't be able to communicate. Maybe
I'd block you.
Would you?
I would. I'd block you. No. Or I'd put a restriction on you for certain hours of the day.
Well, he's as bad now. To be quite honest, it's working both ways.
So that's serious codependent. Can you go anywhere without each other? Like,
oh yeah, totally. Like, we're very independent people.
So you have your own, because it's kind of, you have your own separate lives as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know, it's just our form of communication, I suppose. But as I keep saying, I just genuinely thought everyone else was on the same page as us. I don't know, I just...
So you now you have a problem now because you're realising that you might have a problem now.
How about I'm very happy with the problem?
Okay.
I don't think I want to change it, to be honest.
All right. How many times have you called him already?
Once. Yeah, the only once so far today. So that's not too bad. What time was it? It's not even 10 o'clock yet. We're doing okay.
as soon as you hang up from me now, you'll be on the phone to him. A lot of people only go voice note now. Would you ever think of that? Just send him a voice. No?
No. And he doesn't even have an app. Now, he has WhatsApp on his phone, but he's really bad with technology. Like, he's very old school. Like, I'd have to phone him.
Okay.
Yeah, well, very old fashioned.
Don't change. You're happy just the way you are.
At least because he'll actually have your heart attack if I tell you any of this.
Let me talk to Bernice. Have a great weekend, Grace. Take care.
Okay,
cheers.
Good luck.
Bernice, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
All right. Sorry, I read out your text inadvertently. I didn't know you were coming on the air. That's my bad. For you, it's your mum, is it? Your mam?
It was. It was my mam.
Rest in peace, your mam. Rest in peace. Yeah.
No, we were always very close growing up, Neil. I'm not too sure with the codependency. Maybe it might have been, but it kind of started when I was very young. And my mam's mother and sister, they were killed in a plane crash. And I just saw the trauma.
What plane crash?
The Tuscarawk.
Are you serious? What was their surname?
O'Callaghan and Burke. Bridget O'Callaghan and Hannah Burke.
Oh my God, the Aer Lingus Viscount off Tusker.
Yeah. So from an early age, like, I saw the trauma that my mom went through. And I don't know, did it stem from that? But I always felt, you know, I had to be there for her. And then in my early teens, my mum and dad had a very bad car accident up in Port Leash. And I remember the day she came home, she had 280 stitches in her face. And I just, the trauma of that, I'm nearly losing her. But I think that's why where it might have stemmed from.
Ah, listen, you know? There's nothing. No, come here. We're having a bit of a laugh this morning is all. I mean, your love and your contact with your mum is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's, you know, we were so close, Neil.
You said in the text you'd ring her after lunch, you'd ring her before bed to say goodnight, to tell you that you love her, and on Saturdays you'd go to town, is it?
We would. And my husband used to drop us up. I wasn't driving at the time. And when we got married, he used to drop us up every Saturday morning and collect us in the afternoon. And it was just a lovely time.
Where would you go?
We'd go to the Green Door for a cup of coffee. We'd go to, well, it was Cash's then, Brown Thomas now, and the Munster Arcade, and all those kind of places, do a bit of shopping and stuff, you know. Buy the shops, which is my father's usually got this
before. Doing Patrick Street. That was her, they were kind of, that was her routine. Like, she loved the Green Door, or she loved the swankiness of Cash's, or the poshness of Munster Arcade and places like that.
Yeah, and they all knew her on first name basis as well.
and she passed away 4 years ago.
She did. She did, Neil. And, you know, it was a very trying time because the loss was huge because, like, you're learning to live without getting that love, even though the love lives on after us, but you're just, it takes time to adjust to that, like.
But I would think that now, looking back, you look back at fond memories and thanks that you did all the things you did with your mum on the Saturdays and the phone calls.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we used to have great fun, Neil. Honestly, no, we used to have great fun. She had a great sense of character, and she was a very strong woman. She, like, she was involved in the unions. I know she was a shop steward where she was working. You know, she was very
strong.
Where'd
she work?
Aaron Foods. Later on in Callaghan.
Do you know something? It's a beautiful story, and I think sometimes it could be even a Cork story. Isn't there a kind of an unbreakable bond? I'm sure it's the same everywhere, but on Lee side, it's a bond. Okay, sons have it with mothers and fathers. Don't get me wrong, but the Cork bond between a daughter and a mother, it was so strong that in many cases, wasn't it a case that many girls, if they married, would want to be in a house or settle down near their mam? Isn't that true?
My father used to always say it was a shame to spoil two houses.
But you know what I mean? I'd maybe even to this day, if you can get to live near your mam, a daughter will be in and out to the mam all day long.
Yeah, even like, I have three daughters and I have a son, and like, they're the same. We're all very close. And they all live around me, thank God.
Yeah. It's interesting, actually, you could have a son who doesn't answer the phone to you, but you have a son who will always answer the phone to his mammy. Or at least that's the way I find it in our life. And it's just that maybe he doesn't hear my calls all of the time, and he does answer most of the time, but he would never miss a call from his mammy.
Yeah, and my son's the same, Neil. He will always, or he'll always give me a ring to say, how are you doing now?
Yeah, that kind of way. Some extent, sons become kind of protective of mams as they grow older.
Oh, he would be, he'd be very protective.
Yeah, in a nice way, just making sure, you know, they that kind of bond is unbreakable. And so, and you know, I know that they say a daughter is a daughter all of her life, but a son is a son until he gets a wife. I don't believe that for a second.
No, I don't. I think if the bond is there and the closeness is there, it'll always be there.
Between a son and a mother, absolutely, yeah. 100% agree. They're lovely memories of your mam, the Green Door and Munster Arcade and Cash's and doing Patrick Street and meeting old pals. Well,
and
done.
Actually, like, she had a lot of sisters, and all the O'Callaghans, there was a lot in there. So we'd go visiting all their houses too, and sure, like, the stories were great.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
I just love doing it with her.
Absolutely.
Maybe other people mightn't find that, but we go to one aunt in the morning, another aunt in the afternoon.
No, I think anybody would agree with you there. I know certainly in my own life, or, you know, before I married, or the relationship my wife would have with my daughter, our daughter, Kathy, it's special. Sons are special too, daughters are special, but there's this lovely bond where a mother and a daughter can do things together and spend time together that maybe a son mightn't be interested in at all. You know what I mean?
I know. Even when she was in the hospital there during COVID, like the nurses, and when we weren't allowed in, they used to bring mom over to the window And I used to drive up to the bands and sit in the car. She'd look out the window and we'd talk to the phone, looking at each other. Now, we could have spoken to the phone from here.
Oh, listen, we could have done so much better looking back now when you hear stories like that. Anyway, listen, Bernice, thanks for chatting this morning. You're great.
No problem, Neil. Have a great evening.
All the best. Take care. The Apprentice Show with Elevate Credit Union. Free Food Friday, courtesy of ourselves and Hillbillies. And there's no excuse. You're never too far away from Hillbillies, McCartan Street, Grand Parade, Mahon Point and Fermoy. Maybe over the weekend. Not just chicken, but super smash burgers as well with 100% Irish beef. 55 years doing the business. What do we have for you? The picnic buckets. It'll feed 15 of you, so you need to text who you are and where you're working to 086 8104 106, and the picnic buckets are filled with crispy chicken pieces, juicy chicken tenders coated in the famous Hillbillies secret recipe seasoning. You got the buffalo wings, the spicy buffalo wings bursting with flavour, the fries, the golden fries, the coleslaw and the famous Hillbillies gravy. And Red Patrollers will deliver all this lunchtime if you're lucky enough to win Free Food Friday. So text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. First bunch of shout outs in about 10 minutes time. On codependency. Oh, it was so great to hear those callers. Thank God I'm normal. He's like my best friend. Why wouldn't I contact him 20 times a day, even if it's just to let him know that I hurt my finger? What's wrong with these women, says Mags. If my husband rang me that much, I'd block him. Anthony says, please ask these people, how do they actually have anything to talk about when they're at home, if they're literally on the phone all day? Well, they're just professional natterers. Pat says, I'm confusing codependency with love. I'm 60. My mum passed away 10 years ago. All I can tell you is there wasn't a day that went by when I didn't ring or call her. She was the most beautiful lady on this planet, and I miss her more and more as the years pass. Remember, in all the world, you'll have no one dearer than your mother. They are the heartbeat of every family. Maybe that's why our country feels so broken. Too many of the younger generation are spending their time in front of screens. The fact that you're speaking with another human being gives you real life skills. Well, I understand what you're saying there with regards to maybe conversation waning and screen time increasing. Codependency can quietly drain a relationship because it replaces love with dependency. I've been married for 33 years. We love each other more every day. Being so dependent, though, from what I'm hearing on your program, is a sign of insecurity, says Christina. And I know Avril won't mind these texts. Thanks so much. She needs her own podcast, Avril. A lovely character. Happy Halloween. We'll talk more things Halloween a little later this hour, incidentally. I'd lock her in the walk-in wardrobe, says Ben, and throw away the key. She's a walk-in red flag. Women like that are very high maintenance. If that was my wife, I'd have her number redirected. That poor lady should have rang in yesterday on the OCD conversation. Her poor old husband. Her husband should get a medal, says David. I can guarantee you that Avril is laughing hysterically at that. Keep them coming. Text 0868 104 106. Pick up the phone on 0818 104 106. Back to the phone lines. Over the past few days, I've been contacted by, and I mean it, a lot of parents of a primary school in Clodove. There's a march set today, but I want to give them an opportunity to tell us exactly what happened and why it happened. So I'll chat to Rachel in a minute. But Aisling, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
So on behalf of you and your family and many of the other parents and children, what the heck happened there?
So last Friday, our developing teacher's post was suppressed by the Department of Education.
What does suppressed mean? Axed?
Means her job is unfortunately gone.
Okay, why?
If you go back to towards the end of September, the department looked for final confirmation of school numbers.
Oh, it's not a great phone line now, unfortunately, Aisling. Move around a bit. I was told that the parents have been told that one of the teachers has to leave because student numbers are short.
Yes. So, and the reason we're short is because there is a delay in these families getting the keys to their new homes within our village.
Okay.
So our village is a hugely growing village. In the past 2 years alone, there have been over 250 houses extra added to the village. So we have families arriving every single week to our village as the builders have the homes ready and hand over the keys.
Yeah.
So within the last school year, we gained 5 pupils within that year. So it's clearly evidence that people are joining our school all through the year.
Well, they would be, because in the last 2 years, there's been 450 new homes.
Well, 2 years ago, there was 200 homes in the village, and now there is over 450.
Okay. There's over 450, so it's over doubled.
Absolutely.
And everything was hunky-dory until there was delays in getting keys and actually moving in, is it?
Yes. So on the 30th of September, we didn't reach the quota for these numbers with the department, and their computer then says, no, this school hasn't met the numbers, so we are reducing their staff count by one.
Okay, let me let Rachel jump in on that point, actually. Rachel, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Thanks
you have
for
three,
having
you're
us
welcome,
on.
You're welcome. You have 3 children, and 5th and 6th class are very much affected, to the point that you're saying that your son now, your youngest, will be in a class of 30. You have 4 children.
Right. So I have 3 in 5th and 6th who have lost their teacher. That was the developing post. And as a result of that, now 3rd class is now to be split. Half them are going in with 4th class and half them are going with 2nd class. So my youngest child is part of that cohort, and he's now going to find himself in a class of 35 pupils, split from his friends, having to adapt to a new classroom, new teacher.
That's back to the 1980s numbers in a primary school classroom.
Well, Neil, the department guidelines for class sizes are 1 to 23. Yeah. I mean, it's far in excess of that, you know, and it's obviously going to have not only an impact on the children, but like on the staff as well. Like, they're huge class sizes. They're very difficult to manage. And we're really concerned about the impact it's going to have on their learning, impact on the teachers, you know, and as well as learning supports, because now this is going to result in, a 3rd class, they're going to have to be taken out by learning support to be taught maths, and, you know, as a class of themselves. So it's pulling from those learning supports as well that are already stretched, you know.
So is it fair to say that, is it 2nd class will be, part of them will be in 3rd and part of 3rd will be in 4th, is it? You'll have 2 different classes in the same room.
Yeah, 3rd will be 6th.
Actually, that's called total chaos. And what about the teacher, though? Did somebody actually lose a job here?
Yes, she lost her job, which is very distressing. I mean, the children came out of school when the news broke on Thursday in tears, so concerned about their teacher that she's now out of a job. And I mean, Neil, what's worth noting here as well is that our projected numbers for next year are in excess of 180. So we will be getting a permanent post next September as well. So this is a very unique situation. We're not a declining population where we've lost a teacher and you just have to accept it. We are rapidly expanding, and we're going to get a permanent post next September as well. So, and we have these families coming in before Christmas.
On. Listen, I know these, it. Yeah, yeah.
These families are coming before Christmas. This isn't speculation. This is fact. They are coming. So we will have hit our quota. So we're just appealing for flexibility on the basis, like, we understand that circulars are there for a reason and they have to be followed, but this is a very unique situation.
I know, I mean, you would have intervention here above whatever a computer says with regards to quota numbers. Somebody would have it's called common sense, really. So Aisling, is it a case that if there was 2 more students, 2 more, there would be a teacher?
Correct.
Has anybody kind of said, hang on a second, calm the jets here. This is only a temporary thing. Employ the teacher. There's more students on the way. We're only 2 short. This is fine. We'll sort this. No?
That is what we're looking for. That is why we've been outside the school every day, protesting every single day. And we are going to continue our protest until we get this resolved, because it's unacceptable. We're refusing to accept that this cannot be resolved. Anything can be resolved with will power, and we have the will and they have the power, and we just want them to come to the table. We're pleading for compassion and flexibility given our unique circumstances that we find ourselves in.
Okay.
And it's common sense. Like, there is no reason to not let this teacher come back into school on Monday and let the children resume their normal daily activities as they've had. It's been an exhausting midterm. For us, we're working on this constantly. We're so determined to get this resolved.
The chances are that more parents will get the keys of their houses in the next few weeks.
Absolutely.
And the 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 kids will arrive at the primary school.
We've had this happen, Neil, before. Like, we've had 5 children just rock up to the school last year during the academic year, just on the assumption that we're a country school and we will have capacity. the reality we'll now find ourselves in, you know, if we don't get this post back, is that we are at capacity. So if there's people coming in, you know, afterwards, maybe we might find it difficult, I would imagine,
to cater to the additional, there's no common sense.
We've already accounted for, like, we've accounted for the additional people already. But if there's any more than that, I think we're going to be in trouble, you know.
There are so many things in this country that are just far from fit for purpose, and this is another example of it. Like, is this all gone up to the, all the way up to the Minister for Education, Helen McEntee's desk, or a local TD, or anybody?
It's gone to everybody, absolutely everybody, and we still haven't gotten a response that to say it's been resolved, but they are working on it by all accounts.
What does that mean, working on it?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We haven't gotten an answer yet as to whether or not this will be resolved.
So how do you feel about Aisling? Is if it's impacting primarily on your two girls, third and sixth? Where are they going to be? Will they have a teacher?
No, so my girl in sixth class, it's her teacher that has been lost.
So what happens to her?
She now has to get used to a new teacher again from Monday. And my
Where did the new teacher come from? Is it another teacher from another class?
Yes. So
God.
It's the third class teacher that has been taken. And that's why third class is being split, because their teacher is now being moved.
We'll disappear third class into second or fourth. We'll move that teacher that was in third into sixth.
Yes.
Fifth and sixth, yeah.
For God's sake. Yeah. How can a teacher be doing fifth and sixth, though?
Well, that has been the way since the start of the year, due to the class numbers. You know, the size of that class is joined, and they've been joined since the start of the year. And that's fine, because they, you know, they're...
It's not fine. It's not ideal.
It's not ideal, but I mean...
Does that happen much, where you have fifth and sixth class primary at the same teacher?
Yeah, I mean, it can happen, you know, due to the size of the classes and so on. And they're taken out then individually for maths and... You know, for as an individual group, that really hasn't been an issue. You know, up to now, it's the splitting of third class 9 weeks into the school year, and taking them away from their friends. Like, it's a splitting of a class is more concerning than anything else. You know, would
so
be my.
Is there any common sense at all at play here?
No, it's literally. On a spreadsheet somewhere, computer says no, they are really not looking into the finer details of this and how it's going to impact the overall school.
And tell me about the builder. Is the builder put under pressure to get those keys sorted and let people get in?
Yes, as much as we can.
Yeah, I suppose, Neil, there was just such a narrow timeline. Like, this news only broke on Thursday, that teacher was going on Friday. So, I mean, there has been so little time to try and get this resolved.
Who's outside the school now?
We will all be outside the school from 2 to 3, as we have been for the past week. Parents and children in their uniform. The children are so passionate about it. They're willing to put on their school uniform during their midterm break, stand outside the school with their signs, save our teacher. They are so upset, and it has ruined their midterm break as well, because they are just really concerned about going back next week if this isn't resolved.
Well, they're standing shoulder to shoulder behind the teachers and their parents. That's
100%.
A good thing. Yeah, that's 100%. A good life lesson anyway, isn't it?
100%. And they are so determined as well. And they are not, like, it has been nothing but a talking point in my house for the past week. You know, they cannot understand why this cannot be resolved. And I'm trying to explain it to them that we are working tirelessly, and they see the efforts on the ground. You know, they're there every day in the rain and the cold. They don't care. They want it as much as the parents do. And, you know, they're passionate about their school, and they love their school, and they want to be happy in school, and that's all we want for them.
Absolutely. I've got loads of texts here coming in since you guys jumped on the air from other parents, and Scott has been in touch. Joanne Brown, you may know these people. Siobhan has been in touch. Magella has been in touch. A lot of texts that are even unsigned, all talking about their son being in a class of 35. And mother saying, well done to those that, including Aisling and Rachel, who are, you know, speaking up in this regard. And a lot of people, I'll read out some of those texts in a moment. Do you mind if we get on to the Taoiseach's office and see how aware he is of this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
You got this. I mean, something tells me it will be resolved, because it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. As long as that teacher is still available to start, you know?
To our knowledge, she is, and we are fully committed to continue our efforts next week if we have to.
We are crying out for teachers in this country, and one who's ready and willing to work has been told, sorry, you're not needed. That's insane. It just makes no sense.
Fantastic teacher. Okay. Like, she's an awful loss to our school if we don't get her back. She really will be.
I'll do a few texts on this then and see how things go. I'll pass it on to the Taoiseach's office and see what he makes of the matter. But in the meantime, is there another rally today at the school this lunchtime?
Yeah. We will be there from 2 to 3 today. Like I said, as we have done every day since last Friday, every weekday, and we will continue it next week if we need to. Hopefully we won't need to, and this will be resolved. But if not, we are fully committed to continuing our efforts next week.
Okay. Listen, Rachel and Aisling, thanks for jumping on. I'll do some texts now and we'll stay in touch and see if there's any updates. You come back if there's an update as well, when common sense kicks in, maybe, okay?
Thanks very much, Neil.
Cheers. Thanks for now. Neil. Take care. Take care to both. I'm a parent of a child that gets hours and extra help. My child will now be in a class of 32, even though my child actually needs resource hours and extra hours. That'd be just total chaos. The hours and help are the difference between my child being able to cope with school and not being able to cope with school. The teachers at Cladover are hardworking, kind, and they're trying to do their best. Joanne says, best of luck to Aisling and all of the parents. We're all behind them. We are not going to give up this fight for our teacher. Government will use common sense eventually, perhaps, and make sense of this in the end. Scott says, craziness. We're all looking for some flexibility. Is common sense gone out the window in this country? This is ridiculous, says Siobhan. Department of Education prioritising the process over the children. My daughter's class is being split, which would be disruptive and upsetting. Another one from Magella. My son's in fourth class. Losing the teacher means he will have a class size of 35. This is totally avoidable if common sense were used. We need to be heard, Neil. My son is in Cladove National School. It's awful what's happening. Very much needed and very much teacher now without a job. One final one. My child is in Cladove. His class now will be 35 in fourth class. In 2025, this is ridiculous numbers to have in a classroom. Yes, indeed, in a supposedly very wealthy forward-thinking country. A teacher down. Just a quick few. It was telling you how Generation Z or Z had turned away from avocados and now they're obsessed with the perfect omelette. I was suggesting a cheese and ham omelette. That's all you need. Salt and black pepper. Neil, you're just boring. I put chorizo, onion, cheese and tomato in. It's yum. That's way too much inside the filling of an omelette, I think. Into the microwave for 1 minute, full power. Delicious. It sounds anything like that in a microwave sounds yuck to me, says Robert, but what do I know? And finally for now, 3 eggs, 1 red onion, 1 tomato, mushrooms mixed in a bowl into the pan. When done, cheddar cheese it with slices of Brennan's bread. Yeah, no, the red onion, way too much. Mushrooms, not in an omelette. I'm still back at cheese and ham, full stop. Keep them coming, text 0868 104 106. Somebody said Happy Halloween, and it is that day. Samhain from our Celtic past. Shane Lehan joins us in studio, that wonderful historian and folklorist who's a terrific new book out. More on that in a few minutes' time. Good morning.
Morning, Neil.
This is your day.
It is. You know, it was coming in today, looking at the leaves. It's like someone flicked a switch, you know. All of a sudden, the colours are there. The wonderful skeletal forms of the trees are there. The crows are there. You know, you have that sense, don't you, that everything has changed?
Well, it has. And actually, it's very interesting. You talk about the weather and the weather we're going through. Now, there's a part in the book where you talk of 1849. I'll come back to that. Okay. The night of the big wind, right?
Yeah.
More on that, because that was a full force 5.
Oh, yeah.
Hurricane.
Oh, yeah. That was off the scale completely.
Yeah. So tonight, though, tonight, do you think, will it be impacted weather-wise? Anyway, let's talk a bit about Samhain,
okay,
because...
Let me just think, like, one of the really interesting things for me is the way we divide everything into two parts. Night and day is as simple as that. But we divide the year into two parts. And essentially, where I look at Samhain at the moment, I look at it where everything is finished, okay? So the crops are gone. The apples are still on the trees, but, you know, the frost is going to get them and so on. We're at this point where all the fertility has ended. So we look at that as the end of one thing and the beginning of darkness, if you like, as well. We're going into that dark, dark...
It was the division between the lighter half of summer and the darker time of winter.
That's it. That's
when
it.
The veil of the spirits of the dead world had an opportunity to visit.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think about that. I always say to my students, this is a good one for you now. You should never be afraid of dying, because you die every night of your life. So 12 o'clock, let's call it 12 midnight, you go to sleep, you become unconscious. And we're at that point in the year. We're at that point where we're going in by the fire, stories, we're going into the world of dream, unreality. And the other world is there. And I often think about the other world as something which is sometimes a little bit different to the way you and I would normally think about it. My late brother Rory, for example, my beautiful brother Rory passed away many years ago. But sometimes I dream about him. And it's at that point when I dream that he's as much alive in
my dreams. Is that a visit, do you think, from Rory then?
No, I don't believe in that. But okay. I believe in the kind of the psychology of the other world being something when we think about people, we can manifest them in different ways. Whether we think about tonight, for example, which is a really lovely tradition. In Ireland, people used to light a candle for everybody who died. Sometimes we do it in churches. Which very often in
where did they put it? In the window?
They used to put it in the room where they died because people died at home long ago. And that's a big Irish tradition.
There's a great chapter in the book about the traditional Irish wake and the ceremony and, you know, what's involved in it and the respect shown. It's an incredible chapter.
And there's a lovely aspect to that as well because we had two types of wake. We had what we called the respectful wake, as you would say, but we also had the merry wake, which is very akin to the kind of chaos that we see at Samhain and at Halloween.
There was chaos. There was a big party. I know that there was the Queeners came in, but they were putting fucking clay pipes into the dead man's mouth and all sorts of things, trying to make him part of the celebration.
And having a drink for them as well and a deck of cards. They'd always put a hand out for the corpse. You know, there was all of that. So we talk about, but there was that sense of madness and things that come in. People representing the other world. You know, we have the modern term now, trick-or-treaters. But the people who were masked, who were anonymous, they were also representing the other world,
staying with that then, where you talk about the masks and the costumes and what have you. Now, this goes back 2,000 years. This is our Celtic ancestors who respected Samhain and the spirit world. Did they put on the costumes and the masks? And people might know this unbeknownst to them. It was to keep them safe from spirits, was it?
I think it's two things. Okay, I love the tradition of masking. I love that whole concept. One is that once you're masked, it gives you anonymity. Part of what we do at this point in the year is that we're going into what we call a timeless point. When you're in a timeless point, we're at this threshold. So we're going back to what we imagine to be the cosmogony, the beginning of time. So we ritually create that. And when you put on your mask, you become anonymous. You're no longer you. And in doing that, you have the capability to transcend all elements and all things that are there. So masking isn't just putting on your old cardboard mask or your plastic mask as we did when we were growing up, going around to houses, going around for Halloween. This goes right back into our antiquity. And we do it not just at Halloween. We do it, of course, in the midwinter period for the mummers, for the wren boys. We do it as well for the biddy boys. And right throughout the year, we do it at points of transition for weddings. We straw the weddings. Everyone represents this.
Why would we be putting on, say, witches' costumes then, for instance, or skeletal costumes? Because I had thought it was to say, okay, you can't touch me, evil spirits or spirits from the other world, because I am one of you anyway. No, not really.
We're also manifesting this sense of chaos that comes at this point in time. And we have a Jungian shadow. We all have this other side of us that we don't reveal. And therefore, at this point in the year, that's what we do. And to be honest, costumes are kind of interesting. You know, I have some friends who are very calm and they're very gentle people and so on. But then when they put on a costume, it allows them to express something which is totally different, a different part of a personality. Yeah. And there's a concept in anthropology called communitas, which is that when everybody does it, you're allowed to. So there's licentiousness and people can become quite
Of any age. Adults as good as children.
I've recorded people out in the Aran Islands quite a lot and going out there over the years and the mayhem that they go up to, the pinching and the squeezing and going into people's houses and to causing havoc and mayhem and so on. That's all part
Sounds like the Skelliging days years ago.
The craziness, absolutely.
But you know then, because we obviously, you know, we all went to America. We headed off, an awful lot went in at the age and time of the potato shortage, the famine or genocide, call it what you will. And we took that tradition to America. Isn't that right?
Yes, so absolutely.
They have it. They call it trick or treating. They have the pumpkin and everything. We got the pumpkin back. As part of our new tradition, but it started with us.
There's a lovely, absolutely, and let's take the pumpkin because that's a great one to think about. The pumpkin is super because we had no pumpkins, as you know. We had used to have turnips, and we had awful jobs cutting into the turnips, making these. But the whole,
that's right,
the whole idea of the head, Neil. The whole idea of the head is really interesting because go back into the Celtic past, the decapitation, taking off people's heads, was a huge part of Celtic tradition. I actually have a student.
Why?
Why? Well, once you take off the head, they used to embalm them and they used to keep them in the house, okay, as sort of trophies.
The head?
Yes, yeah. And there's a very...
They were a bizarre bunch.
Yeah, absolutely bizarre. But more than that, this was a sort of an idea as well that they didn't die, that they could actually... They weren't... People believed in reincarnation. And so by keeping the head, it's kept them in a place.
And is that the reason why people hollowed out turnips and now hollow out pumpkins?
Yes. And they had the heads associated with this time of the year. It was really interesting is that, you know, your thumb, okay? And we always have the story of Fionn McCool and he put his finger on the Breton facet.
Fionn, that would be Sive's son?
That's right, yeah.
No, his husband or father.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
Didn't Fionn and Sive give birth to Oisín?
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Sorry, I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
But when you put your thumb in your mouth, long ago, Fionn used to put his thumb into a severed head's mouth and it would tell him all of the, he would come alive again and they would speak loudly. And again, all of those stories of Fionn, of the dagger, the mythology, they all occur at this time of the year. If you go through the mythology meticulously, you will see Samhain
so
is the time.
So we understand the reason for the costumes and now we've answered the question because I never knew the reason behind the head of the pumpkin or the turnip. This is the reason why. The barmbrack, though.
Okay.
Now, that has changed hugely. We're only now left with the ring. How did this start? Because way back along, there was lots of stuff in the barmbrack.
It was replete. Absolutely. If you were a baker long ago and you'd put in all the charms, it would be huge. But let's go back. There are two things. I'm so happy to clear this up. There are two words for barnbrack or barmbrack, right?
Okay, barinbrack being our square
guy. Barinbrack is the Irish one, so that's where we get the word barn, B-A-R-N. That was the homemade cake at home, right? Soda bread, filled with all the charms that I'll go through in a moment. Later what happens is the bakeries start to make bracks. We're using barm yeast and it becomes a barm brack. So there are two...
We always called it barn brack. I don't know why that was.
Exactly.
Just kids.
So the barn brack was the old speckled cake, okay? Into that you put your charms. Now the charms consist... The ring, of course, is the one you remember for marriage because this is the great time for foretelling marriage. But also you had the pea... for poverty, you had the stick that you were either going to get beaten by your husband, or you're going to beat your husband, one or the other. You had all sorts of a miraculous medal meant that you were going to join holy orders, for example.
Was usually a miraculous a medal of the Virgin Mary to symbolise becoming a nun, perhaps.
Or maybe a priest, and that was a big deal back in the day. My goodness, you know, that was your fortune that was going to be. So you had all of that. But this is interesting too, Neil. Not only did you put it in the cake, okay? They used to also make Culcannon, which is the most traditional dish for Halloween.
Love it.
So you boiled your spuds, took them out, peeled them, put them back in, mashed them, put in all your lovely butter and everything else, and you put
cabbage,
and you put your charms into that, okay? And everyone had a spoon, and you picked it out spoon by spoon, and whoever got the charms, that was the
But they used to be so. There was a pea, a stick, a piece of cloth, a small coin, a ring, and a bean. The rag or the cloth was
that was for poverty. As well. Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Stick was
the stick was beating. Yeah,
in the nicest way, it was you would have an unhappy marriage, but we always thought you'd beat your wife.
Yeah, but that was well,
or she'd
or,
beat
or
your
she'd
husband.
Beat you. Well, listen, it worked. And listen, as we were all reared by the wooden spoon, you'll remember it might have some affinity there too. You know,
the so bean was you'd be rich, is it?
It depends. You had a pea, you had a bean, you had a rag. There's all different versions. Okay, so you can't really settle it down because quite often it was a bit like reading the tea leaves. You know, I had a grand aunt used to read the tea leaves for us. She used to always kind of come up with all sorts of different things. You know, a letter in the post or you know, a stranger calling.
Fabulous. And, the ring was you will be married in 12 months.
That's right. But you see, everything depended, the whole thing was about love divination. The girls were obsessed at this time of the year. One of my favourite ones was this, right? The girls, if they wanted to know who their future man was going to be, they would take off their shift, which was their slip, their most intimate item.
That's in the book. Yeah.
And what happens?
That's a bit over the top.
And what would happen is they'd put it through the stream, okay? And they'd wash it, and then they'd bring it back, hang it at the end of the bed, and they would hope that he'd come along and he'd turn it for them and so on. So there was lots and lots of detail like
that. We'll pick up on the book after the break, but just ahead of that now, everything's changed now. They took, because of health and safety and food regulations and all that nonsense, we're just left with the ring. I would love if we still had all the other charms inside.
But, you know, it's, as you say, it's health and safety, but we can still
do it. The heck? We never choked as kids. A match was stuck into the fucking cake for the stick.
I couldn't agree more. And listen what we'll do. Why don't people make this simple cake? This simple cake of soda bread. We don't have to go and buy it in the shop. I do this all of the time with my students. When people call to us, we make the cake. You can bring in all the charms, you know, and there you go. Job done.
Chatting with Shane Lehan, Old Ways to New Days is his latest book. It's a must-have if you love everything with regards to being Irish and where we came from. Isn't that what it's about? It's like trapping where we came from and explaining the importance of it. It's fabulous.
When I was writing it, Neil, I started writing just haphazardly. I had no rhyme or reason as to what I was doing. Yeah. I was writing things that interested me and so on. And the poor old editors that came along afterwards, they had to put some sort of schmuck on it, some sort of law and order on it and put it arranged.
They're doing their job.
They were, but it was great because they made me think about what I was thinking of. And, you know, there are things which are essentially Irish, you know, things which are absolutely unique to us, like that everything from the weather to tea to, you know, even the chalky gods, as I call them, where we grew up, that sense of religion, all of the things that we
absolutely
had
I mean how it maybe changed with regards to relationship around love,
yes,
marriage, mm-hmm, matchmakers,
yeah,
dowries,
yeah.
The importance of, you know, the respect when somebody dies, the stopping the clock, the wakes, you know, the even the burial process,
yeah,
you know, it's amazing. And then
those traditions continue, you know. It's I was even putting in that I remember when my sister was pregnant with my niece now, when my dad died, she didn't go into the graveyard because it was still...
There you go.
And those traditions, we still hold on to them. We don't even think about it, but they're there, you know.
Yeah. I think there's an amazing story of some British soldier who... did wreck way back in the, I don't know, was it 1600s, 1700s?
Yes.
And ultimately died himself and was buried in a Catholic graveyard.
That's right.
Where all of the dead...
My hinterland, the Malta area, and all of the dead got up out of their graves and headed across.
No, they lifted out their headstone and they marched to another field.
They did.
I mean, it's amazing. Even learning things as you go along from where, you know, terminology like tea time,
yeah,
which obviously would have been very much a posh thing at the time, or the arrival of tea, or the tay man who went around selling small bags of tea.
I don't know, Neil, like secretly we can all confess, like sometimes I might go through 10 pots of tea in the day, right? And I'm not joking, right? You know, especially when I'm writing or I'm doing anything, you know, it's a break from things. But the tay man was a wild man altogether. He was like a drug dealer long ago, right? He was coming off to your
dead
house.
From it and dead without it,
and do you know what? He had little weighing scales, and you'd swear some of the tea was badly adulterated with all sorts of turf mold and all sorts of
turf dust.
Yeah, everything in there. But he would make a big palaver about it, you know, and sell it, selling small quantities. But people got addicted to it, like we all are. It's just, you know, it was introduced. But when tea came first, people had no idea what to do with it. And of course, the parish priest was there. He was expecting for the station mass. He was expecting the cup of tea. What happened? She bought
a pound of tea.
She put a pound of tea. She put it into the pot, boiled it all off, strained off the water, and put it out in a plate in front of it and said, "There you are now," you know.
Do you know the first tea bag that I ever saw? I boiled the water, put the water into the cup, tore open the tea bag and poured the powder into it.
Of course you did. Yeah, of course you did.
That's, I hadn't a clue what it was.
Complete sense. And I think there was a man in New York, O'Sullivan, he was selling tea, and he was he's the guy accredited for creating the tea bag. I have to say I'm a loose tea person still, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, okay. It's more of a ritual.
But
it was a ritual back then. But you look at the, you know, the passage of time. Like I spoke about January the 6th, 1839, the night of the
Big wind.
This was the this a hurricane?
Oh, it was.
Because we talk about climate change now. This destroyed the country this week.
It did. And I've been going through newspaper accounts, I've been going through contemporary accounts and so on. One of the things
it's one of the most powerful passages in the book, actually, the description of that hurricane.
Listen, it's incredible. And one of the things I really like about it is that we often hear of what we call the shigwea, or the fairy wind. And people have accounts of the fairy wind. But when there was these hurricanes, often the cocks of hay that were, and the large collections that were there of cereal and so on, they were often lifted entirely and taken maybe half a mile away and landed down. And but roofs were blown off houses, trees
people
were
taken down.
Oh, absolutely colossal. And like, we have the modern media now, we can see what's happening all over the world, in Cuba, just the last few days, all of that. But people in the past didn't experience anything like this, and they thought the world was coming to an
end.
And
I loved the sections there where you talk about, because we have to change, that's all about life, you know, and of course modern technology makes life that little bit better, but it takes away a lot of the kind of nostalgia from the past. You have a section then where you talk about the arrival of the letter, the arrival of the newspaper, the arrival of the electric light, the arrival of the wireless, indoor toilets, running water.
Yeah.
It sounds inconceivable now.
Yes.
But these were all revolutions, and certainly in rural Ireland.
They were. And the rapidity of that is because we were talking there about, I grew up most of my life in Cork, but spent huge amounts of my time in West Kerry, in South Kerry, down in near Port McGee in Valentia. And I was back there recently at the Daniel O'Connell Summer School. I was giving a paper, and all of a sudden I went back and I looked at the houses that were there, and I thought about the life that they had and the people that sat inside and the fires and how they heated themselves and how they fed themselves. And in no time at all, how quickly that has changed. Here we are with our electric gateways. The kids got out of the car that I was looking at. They had their all plugged in. They had their phones in front
immediacy,
of them.
Immediacy.
And I'm saying that's within our lifetime. You know, I'm still considered a young fella, but I'll be 60 years of age this year. And you know, all of a sudden, I'm starting to think.
You are a young fella. Take my word for it. Even the evolution of the picture house, you know, that's fabulous. Because my father remembers the jam jars in the call.
Yeah.
Back in the time of the emergency, that's you got in for a jam jar, and then usherettes going up and down the aisles. You talk, what were they selling, these usherettes? Oh, fags?
Listen, cigarettes. I mean, my great memory of going to the pictures long ago was like literally the usherette with her flashlight going around. And right throughout the film, you know, you would have people going along.
Ben-Hur or John Wayne or the Westerns or Flash Gordon.
The beam of light coming back from the ceiling, right, was just full with these eddies of smoke going up, you know. And you'll remember, I bet you, Neil, you'll remember the jumbos, which were...
Oh, that was a bit of canoodling.
That was up the back. There was something special about those. But you went to the cinema for lots of different reasons, but the film mightn't have been the most important.
That's right, that's right. Listen, I want to finish up with a story that you will recall because it's in the book. So we talk about the arrival of television down around Port McGee, Carsevine and stuff like that. Your aunt had a shop down in that area. There was a guy who would come in for his messages, right? And the television had just arrived. Finish with that story because it's very funny.
So my beautiful Auntie Mary, you know, she would be always courteous to the old bachelors in particular up the side of the mountain, and they'd come down with an old box, you know, and she'd be filling in whatever their...
What's spuds or a tin of beans or a bit of meat.
A bag of sugar, you know, and all of that kind of thing. And when that was happening, they'd go around the door and my uncle would be inside, Uncle John, and he was a gas man.
This would be a kind of a bachelor, an elderly bachelor.
Yeah, and they were shy because they wouldn't come down when other people... might only come down once a week, you know? And what happened anyway was that the television had come on, and the person at the time was Thelma Mansfield, the beautiful Thelma.
Flowing blonde hair.
That's her, and Thelma was there. Well, the man came in, he'd never seen a television before, and he saw Thelma and she announcing something on the telly. Well, he got all kind of shifty, you know. He was absolutely kind of looking around the corner. And my uncle, being a gas man, he says, you know, she's looking at who? She's looking at who, like that, you see? Well, he got absolutely shy altogether. Well, the next day, anyway, he came down a week later for his messages. He was all dressed up as if he was literally going out on a date. He had a suit
hair
on.
Hair done, the hair suit done, on, the whole shaved thing. And everything.
Shoes polished, the whole lot. And it came in and... he came down every evening to look at Thelma on the television.
He thought she was.
Oh, yeah.
He just didn't get it. Like,
he didn't know.
The simplicity of life.
But how could he get it, you know? And was there, and my uncle, of course, stirring it all the time. No better man for that, you know?
Absolutely. We take brilliant. So much for granted, but that opportunity for him to see something for the first time, that must have been bewildering, you know?
It was.
Moving and pictures in a box.
I was. And, you know, even going back to the wireless, just to mention it, I got a great story the other day, or I have it in the book, that when there was lots of people around, there was no amplification. They used to take out the old tin bath and they'd put the wireless into the tin bath, and that would resonate the sound.
Of course
around
it did.
For
everyone who'd have thought of doing that?
To hear.
Like, yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, it's great.
Listen, it's great to catch you. I'm delighted you popped in as opposed to on the phone, because it's great to meet you face to face. This is your day. Enjoy it today.
I will.
I would encourage anybody to get a copy of this book, either for yourself or a wonderful Christmas present. I'm so delighted you enjoyed writing it, because sometimes it can be a trial. Old Ways to New Days by Shane Lehan. All bookstores, obviously.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
You should be very proud of it. It's capturing something very important.
I'm delighted with it, Neil. I'm delighted.
Good to see you. It's Halloween, and we'll talk more Halloween in a few minutes' time, particularly if you have your, you know, maybe you have your own plan for tonight. And one thing you haven't mentioned so far, and I'll come back to, is Snapapple Night. Does that still happen? That's part, was always part of Halloween when we were kids. It was the big, for us, it was the big plastic, I suppose it was like a huge big flat bucket or a pail or anything like that that would hold water. You know, back in the day, what would it have been? You know, where you wash the dishes and you had this big plastic insert that went into the sink, and you load it up then with water and apples, and you'd stick the big coin stuck in the apple, and it was bobbing on Snapapple Night. And then more apples would be strung by twine from the ceiling, and the same idea, hands behind your back, money in the apple, and whoever could take a bite out of the apple kept the money. So that was another great tradition. I'm assuming that still happens. I hope it still happens. But anyway, from yesterday's program with regards to spending, and it was good fun, and we really had a good laugh chatting about how you could save money and things you should do to keep a few bob, or maybe trying to get the household budget go further. But one or two of the contributions yesterday were quite worrying in one way about overly controlling partners, right? Keeping an eye on the spend or checking the bank account if it's a joint bank account as to what a partner might be spending it on. Here's another one. I'm an invalid. I don't work. My husband controls all the money. I have my own account, but I must ask him to put the money into it. Isn't it an awful way to live? I can't come on the air, and please don't give out my name. Well, I think you feel as if it's an awful way to live, and if you're asking me that question, I think it's wrong. I wonder, is it ever too late to change that, where you don't feel beholden or as if you're even having to beg for money from your husband? I mean, who would really think that that is a proper way or a happy way or a fair way to live? That woman doesn't need a high-cost loan. She needs a new husband. If he has money and she has a doctor's appointment and has to take out a loan for it, she needs a new husband. So, you know, like, there's a serious side to it as well as to who's controlling the purse strings or the finances of the family. I said enough about that yesterday. I'm not going to be repeating myself. Mind you, it did suggest some texts along the lines of, isn't that every reason why a woman should have a runaway fund? These joint accounts are not a good idea. You need your own independence. Now, the runaway fund was one of these, like, kind of secret savings account that somebody might keep to give them financial independence if they needed to leave a situation, say, regarding a, for whatever reason, a bad or an intolerable relationship, or an unfulfilling life where you just wanted a new start. It wasn't always a bank account, incidentally, or a credit union account or anything like that. It could have been just a stash of money that was saved over time and hidden somewhere in the house, the runaway fund. We have three bank accounts, our own personal account each, and then the household account. We put in the same amount each week to pay for gas, electric, and everything else we need. Anything left over, we buy stuff for the house. But we have independent personal accounts independent of the household account. And you know something? That to me makes perfect sense. Now, back after the break, but just ahead of that, Clodagh National School story. Micheál Martin's office have been back to us about the Clodagh National School already. So I want to acknowledge that, in fairness to them. They were straight back. And I want to thank Mary Rose, who heads up Micheál Martin's constituency office. So thank you, Mary Rose. They were only made aware of this situation after the appeals process closed, but now they are seeing what they can do regarding the matter. So at least it's across Micheál Martin's desk. And hopefully that will make all of the difference. Because I saw a text come in there this morning, and I don't know whether it's from the teacher or somebody who's texting me on behalf of the teacher, saying the teacher is ready and willing to work and could even be in the classroom on Monday morning if it can be made possible. So that's good to
hear. You know, earlier on this morning, it was talking about Andrew being stripped of everything. Now he is a mister, no longer a prince. He's been booted out of his big pad. It's just amazing. We talk about cancelling people, but that's got to be one of the biggest cancellations ever. And there's even kind of a spooky, kind of an almost an eerie attachment to it. It was done from the grave by a girl who took her own life and is departed. But even in spirit now, one wonders what Virginia Giuffre makes of all of this. Her family are speaking very much and issued a very heartfelt and powerful statement on her behalf. You know, the book, of course, changed everything and people just don't believe Andrew anymore. So even that has a kind of a spirity aspect to it on the day of this happening and talked about on the day of Halloween or Samhain. I'm far from a storyteller. I just thought I'd pass that on. But Sean O'Leary is certainly a storyteller. And he's got his own life story, which in itself is just kind of wacky and out there because he's living off grid somewhere down around Port Magee. That was once or twice I passed you on the road, Sean. I had to divert the car thinking I'd run you down, you and the goats. in your big Wellington boots.
Oh, sure, that's it. Oh, I played the part. Well, they're fierce and handy.
Are you a first cousin of Shane Lehan then?
I am. My mother and Shane's dad were brother and sister.
Small world.
I know. And, you know, you can really see those two people, Mom was Mary and Uncle Tyke, they were very magical, very imaginative people, and they came from a great line of very practical people. But I think Mom and Uncle Tyke always kept that imagination between them.
And that's what he's trapped in the book, actually. You know, those stories that need remembering, capturing and retold over and over. But for you now, Samhain, when the veil between us and the spirit world is at its weakest, so that the spirits and ghosts can walk amongst us, you believe that, don't you?
I do, and I think it's very important. And it's a great time, because it's a time to think of friends and family that we've lost. And, of course, as everybody gets older, that queue gets bigger and bigger. But it's also to remember the ancestors. And the only reason we're here is because of the resilience of our ancestors.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful. And, of course, you know, I suppose people then along the way started thinking, oh my God, I owe that man a tenner and he's dead, so he could come back and it wouldn't be so joyous to see your ancestors.
So superstition was a huge part, and perhaps to some extent it still is, but certainly going back hundreds of years, people were very superstitious.
Oh, they were. They were totally. And they wouldn't want to be going off on their own at Halloween night or anything like that. They always kept it. They stayed in-house. But they also would set a place for their dead friends and family. So they would have a place at the table and a chair. They'd set up it for the ancestors. Mm. And they reckoned that was a very kind of comforting and welcoming sight.
Mm. You probably know of the superstition index. They said that people in Kilkenny are apparently the most superstitious in the country. But it broke it down into all of the different pishogues that people believe, the power of fairy forts, banshees and ghosts. Can you relate to all of that?
Oh, God, yes. And you know what's lovely, Niall, is I have a lot of African students now, and where I teach in the O'Connell FET Centre, and I love telling them fairy stories because they have a grounding in it, and they almost fall off their chair with it, you know, when you're telling them. So they really have it, you know, Neil, it's a real, it's there. It's very hard. It's open to, if you want to believe it, it's there.
Ever see a ghost?
Well, now there was one night, a Halloween night a few years ago, I had been down checking the goats and I was walking up that road that you saw me, and it was late at night and I had a little flash lamp, but I saw these two green eyes and they were quite tall. And I was like, oh my goodness, all the goats are tied in, the dog is at home. And I just said, should I be afraid of you? I said that out loud just to... And this car, away over, its lights just shone perfectly to show me it was a deer. It was kind of a deer.
Oh, God's sake.
Which ran off, but only...
I thought it'd be a banshee coming down the road to meet you.
I know, but it is. It's you can see this time of the year as well. We've been so used to the summer and the autumn. The evenings are getting darker. There is that chance of the unknown. You can really feel that coming in on the dark evenings. There is that unknown side to it. So then people would fill the gaps with imagination as well.
And storytelling. And that's where it all came from, a lot of it, isn't it? Telling stories around the fire. Yeah.
Oh, sure, totally. And of course, the more dramatic storytellers and the more gory, I suppose, for want of a better word, would be the ones that everybody wanted to listen to.
Would you be telling stories now to the goats and the pigs off-grid? Like, you, have you electricity at all?
No, not yet. I'm thinking of getting it, but we'll see.
Have you hot water?
No, I'm thinking of getting it.
What the hell, man? You've not got a microwave? No? No electric light?
No. The pan and a few flash lamps.
Why?
Well, it kind of just happened like that, and I'm still... Do you know something, Neil? I can feel, I know this is going to sound mad now, but I can feel the zing of electricity when I'm in a building now, because I live without that zing. So if I do get electricity, it will be in part of the house, not all of the house, or like in one room or something like that.
Does it keep you much more connected, I wonder, with nature or with the past?
Totally, very much so, because you're not just kind of learning how they lived, you're living like they lived.
Amazing.
And you're also, what I find is in the summer, there's no need to be inside. You're just thrown out all the time. And in the winter, it's much more like a womb and you're inside and you're going to bed. You're going to bed at a good time when it's dark. But there's no point in staying up.
How do you charge your mobile phone?
Well, I do that at work, and I have very good neighbours as well.
You call to the neighbour down the road, is it to charge the phone?
Oh, sure. I nearly have my socket out ready to go wherever I am.
Have you got into pigs now as well as the goats?
I have got two of the most beautiful pigs. They're Cooney Coonies, Betty and Babs.
What do you keep pigs for?
Why not? They were for sale, and my brother-in-law, God bless them, went off and got them with me, and they were the cutest thing ever, and they still are very cute. But Neil, they are the most amazing animals. They are highly intelligent. They know exactly what's going on. They're watching me. They are fearless. They take no notice. They're like two little missiles on legs. They just move around, the two of them. They'll take food wherever they want. They'll break in. They'll go anywhere. But they're just adorable. They are really... And the screech. I've never heard the sound of a pig. I haven't grown up like... But it's like disalarming.
The description of your pigs sounds like a description of my dog.
That's it.
How many goats have you?
Oh my God, about 20.
Have they all got names?
Oh God, they have.
They know where you can remember all the names, though.
Well, no, hold on. Now we have River. And Mini Margot, Rowan, we have Pancake, there's one that doesn't have a name up there, but then you go down and we have Gandalf, and we have Nefertiti, and we have Mamma Mia, Jupiter, Cinnamon, Hyacinth, they have a Hyacinth, God rest her soul, and a Velvet, and Ozzy, and Celeste. And you could move down then to Holly, Mamma Mia, Ruby Wax is down there, Gonzago. They're all.
Are you looking at them now as you're doing this?
No, I'm actually back in the village at the moment. My niece is going to Australia next week.
Are you in Port McGee?
I'm in Port McGee village.
Go on, right. Would you just run up the road there and check that the roof is still in my house?
Oh, I'll do that. I'll give it a.
So why haven't you got a goat named Paddy or Johnny or Mary or?
It just kind of happens. You know what happens? When we had calves and cows growing up, Dad would always give that job to me to call the calves. And I remember, Dad, if somebody came along and said, do the cows have names? You know, we'd have American cousins over. And Dad would always be, oh, that's Harriet, that's Jerusalem. This is, you know, he'd have all these mad names. And I suppose I stuck with that then.
What kind of rituals will you have today now, it being Samhain, Halloween?
What I do myself, and I think it's a really nice thing, I make a broom from a lot of the branches that are around now, because actually the essence of the branches at the moment, they're dropping their leaves, they're getting rid of stuff for the winter so they can survive. So I'll make a broom of a lot of branches and plants and stuff, and then I'll go around in a circle sweeping out what I don't want for the next year and sweeping in what I do want. And then I'll give the broom to the goats and they'll chew down on that.
So when you say sweeping out, is that kind of out with the old and in with the new? I thought that was kind of New Year's Eve, you know?
And you see, this is New Year's. This is the Celtic New Year.
Ah, thank you, Sean. I see. Yes,
this is the sound. And I think this is the end of the year. And in spring, on the 1st of February, the Celtic way, we then celebrate the new year. And there's this kind of time now of darkness, settling down, surviving, see what you have, see what you haven't got, and survive that way for the 3 months. So it's much nicer having the end of the year now, surviving, and then on the 1st of February, having the new year and moving forward.
It's amazing. It's amazing. You'll brush out the year tonight and the goats will eat the broom. Goats would eat anything, I'd say, would they?
Well, I tell you, the pigs will eat anything. I could nearly start a business for getting rid of bodies.
Do you know something? I was thinking that earlier on, but I didn't have the cop on to say it. Like, it was on a very serious note, like, don't go collapsing and dying unbeknownst to people, hear me?
I tell you, I'd be in Betty and Babs forever.
As Betty and Babs won't be all that friendly then, I can tell you. Well, listen, go and get yourself a barn brack in the visit in the village and bring it home, butter it up and have a couple of slices tonight.
Of course.
You might get the ring.
Speaking to you.
You too. Mind yourself, Sean,
happy
as always.
Halloween now. Take care.
Lovely bye-bye. Guy. Well-loved guy down in the whole Port Magee and Carrigsaveen area. Sean O'Leary. The storyteller.
Talking about the olden days, were they golden days?
Well, in some ways, yes, and in other ways, no. There's a lot of things that you would not give up now with regards to modern technology and inventions. But I spoke to Shane about the arrival of the television, and he told the story of the bachelor farmer coming down and thinking that Thelma Mansfield, who was a beautiful, beautiful looking woman, and she was one of the continuity announcers in RT, long, flowing blonde hair. Do you remember, PJ, old enough to remember Thelma Mansfield?
Oh, I do.
Huh? Wasn't she the most beautiful? The most beautiful, yeah. So apparently your man anyway thought that she was looking at him, right? It reminded me of a story my wife told me once about her grandfather when the television arrived. And he's watching a television. He might have been watching Singing in the Rain or something, right? And your man, Singing in the Rain. And it's pelting down on top of him. And one of the girls was going out into town and he said, and it was a beautiful day outside, but your man says to her, you want to get your coat? It's raining outside. Because he saw it on the TV.
Well, my nan's mother, my nan's brother used to live with us. And God bless him, he was an old man. I'm going back to the 70s now, early 70s. And even when the electricity came in, he'd go over and he'd turn the switch on. Do you remember the old round, dark black switches? He'd go over and he'd turn that on. He'd look around and he'd say to me, he'd say, young fella, turn on the candle, he'd say to me. Absolutely no comprehension of it at all. But with the telly, poor Paddy used to say to me as well, God rest him, he used to say, young fella, get into the back of that there and put the news on. Just be on about 7 o'clock in the evening. Get into the back of that there and put the news on.
Well, that was on demand. We have that now, but it wasn't there then.
Oh, sure, this is it.
But you remember the people you could rent to television? Do you remember that? There was a slot on the side of it. You put coins into it. You get RTV rentals. We're doing Maddens. We're doing Hennessy Hi-Fi. We're doing it. You rented the TV by the week, black and white.
Yeah, we used to rent on. I was out living out in the Leash Kilkenny borders at the time, but we used to rent one out of a place now in Port Leash. It's even before the slot came in. And my nan used to get it around September every year when the evenings would start to shorten. And she'd keep it straight through then until about March until the evenings got brighter again.
And what would she do with it then?
Oh, she'd send it back.
Why?
Oh, she'd send it back because her thinking on it was, there are better things to be doing now on a summer's evening, be out playing hurling or doing a bit of work.
Could you imagine if people, so it was gone back to the rental shop and she'd rehire it again then in the autumn?
She'd rehire it again in the autumn. Oh, she was to break her heart.
It'd be interesting to give people the thought to maybe think about doing that with their own children, you know, take away the television on the first day of June. Bring it back on the first day of October. There'd be murder, I'd say.
Oh, sure, you'd have riots on the streets over it. You'd have riots on the streets over it. But, and another, some bright spark came up with an idea then of Do you remember the Lucozade bottles?
Yeah, the big ones, yeah. They were kind of orangey.
Remember, used to have the orange.
Yeah.
Remember, they had the orange kind of wrapping around the bottle.
No idea why they had that orange plastic on the bottle. I have no idea.
No, I don't think anyone ever did. But some bright spark came up with the idea that if we had an old, we couldn't afford a colour TV, but we could to rent, but we could afford an old monochrome, the old black and white one. And someone, bright spark came up with the idea of putting that plastic sheet off the Lucozade bottle across the screen of the television, and it would make it into colour.
It just made everybody look jaundiced.
I'm sure it's no wonder I was blind as a bloody bat trying to look through.
We have colour television. It happens to be the wrapping of a Lucozade bottle.
But even another thing, Mammy used to always say the rosary every evening. She said it at 8 o'clock every evening, except Tuesday evenings. Because Hawaii 5-0 was on a Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock.
Buckham Dano.
The rosary had to be said at 7. So even the Lord God himself had to make way for the Lord.
Your mam fancy Steve McGarrett or something?
You know, I'm thinking back now, Neil, I think she did, but she wasn't saying anything. No.
But what was the story you were telling the lads about if there was any kind of kissing or canoodling on the television?
Oh, yeah, anything at all like that now. And Mammy had turned she'd turned the
brightness down.
The colour, yeah. Or to be totally dark, like it'd be black, it'd be gone.
She'd jump up out of her seat, she'd head for the dimmer switch and blacken the screen.
The first thing she said to me, she used to sit by, we had an open fire in the house, she used to sit by the fire, and she'd say to me, PJ, she'd say, you turn away from that there now. And she'd go over to either turn it off, she'd turn the colour down until the kissing scenes, and that was done.
How did she know when the kissing was over? Oh, the sound is.
She'd give it a couple of minutes, because at the time, that wouldn't last very long on TV anyway, you know what I mean? Now, look, it could be just a quick kiss on the lips or something, but she'd give it a couple of minutes. Of course, unless Jack Lord was doing it, of course.
Kind of vaguely, I don't know, did I dream it, or did somebody tell me, or was it an experience I went through? Where kids were told, close your eyes now. Close your eyes now.
Oh, no, I wasn't even given that
injury. Dull a colour now.
Or another thing she would say to me, close your eyes now. If you watch that, you go blind. And there were several times I said, you know what? I think I'll chance one eye. I have two of them.
Somebody says, Dad would make us put pillows over our faces and we'd say, dull a colour for the kissing or the cuddling scenes. God, they were simple times, weren't they?
Ah, sure, they were simple. I even just buying into the... Or another thing, Neil, I don't know whether it was a thing in Cork or not, but if anybody in the community was to die during the winter months when we would have a television, there'd be no television or radio in the house for 3 days until the person was buried.
Oh, listen, and the mirrors would be covered as well as everything else. Yeah,
right,
and the TV screen, there'd be a big black drape over the television or something like that, a blanket or something.
And for the life of me, I could never understand the mirror thing.
Something to do with the other world, blocking the connection or something, or whatever, I don't know. Something to do with that.
Right. Yeah, I never figured that one out. But I know on All Souls Night, Mammy used to go, before she go to bed, she'd leave the door open.
Amazing.
And she used to leave stuff on the table.
Oh, my God. Children. Isn't that amazing?
We'd be terrified.
Did she say it was for spirits that they called?
Oh, yeah. She said it might be a lonely soul.
I love that. I love those stories. Well done, PJ.
They were brilliant. They were brilliant times. Totally different to what we live in now. And that was our screen time, Neil.
Listen, happy Halloween to you, pal, as always.
Happy Halloween to you and all the crew there, Neil.
Cheers,
and to your family.
Take care. Neil, great to hear Shane Lee Han on air with you. He was talking about the start of television. I remember an elderly lady whose daughter used to help her to change to nightwear near the fire. Charles Mitchell was reading the news. She used to say, I can't be undressing with that man looking at me. When the news was over, Charles would say, Ehava, and she'd say, heave off, says John McCroom. You see, they actually thought, I don't want to be over-explaining it, but they actually thought it was just them and the person in the television and that they were looking and talking to each other. Lovely to hear Sean living off-grid in Port McGee. How does he do it? Wonder. I'd love to do it. Would I survive it? Not sure. Is he living in a house or a tent? Would he be blown away down there now, I wonder? Hopefully he'll come back on air again soon. I don't think he's in a house.
He's in a mobile home. Did I not mention him when I was chatting to him? My apologies. It's a mobile home, and he's completely off-grid down there. I mean, that in itself is an incredible story. Can